Just so you know.
Members, we hit quorum. No, it's quite all right, Representative Erickson. We failed to coordinate today's hearings with our sister committee, the K-12 Finance Committee, of which a good number of our members sit on. And so there will be members going back and forth between the two committees. Fortunately, they're on the same floor, so it won't be as bad. But I want to apologize ahead of time to the public for what appears to be lack of interest in these two bills. It is not, believe me. The committee members have great interest in both these bills and have been vetting them carefully with one another. And if it weren't for the conflicting committee hearings, I'm sure we would have a full house here today. But I suspect we will have committee members coming in and out. And so with that, we're going to get started. The first bill for today, and actually before we do that, I'm going to entertain a motion from Representative Tilbury to adopt the minutes from March 13th.
So moved.
Thank you. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. First bill then is House File 33780, Representative Hornstein. And Representative Hornstein, if you care to move your bill,
sure.
Representative Hornstein moves House File 3780 be recommended to pass and referred to Finance Committee with a re-referral to the Committee on K-12 Finance.
Correct, Mr. Chair. Hornstein. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And House File 3780, I know, has generated a lot of interest, and it's relatively new area for me, so I've learned quite a bit in the last week. This came to me from some parents who attend my kid's school, so I have a personal connection to the folks that are promoting this. But as I learned more about it, there clearly is an interest in enhancing our capacity and ability to promote reading in our schools, and I think there's a real need there. I have met with also some of the opponents of this bill, because I learned pretty early on that there was passion on that side as well. And with my community organizing background, I'm trying to build some relationships and as best I can see if some degree of consensus can be reached. That hasn't happened as of yet, but I'm happy to report, Mr. Chair and members, that I think we are making a little progress, and that's why I would like to move a delete all amendment to my bill.
Representative Hornstein moves the DE1 delete everything amendment. Representative Hornstein, would you care to comment on it?
Sure. My testifiers will comment more extensively on it, but Mr. Chair, I think the most significant part of this is responding to one of the concerns that were raised, which is the testing of teachers. And so I think the most important part of the DE1 is it deletes the requirement for existing teachers to take an additional test for reading assessment for their licensure. So, but there are other changes, and those can be explained in the context of going over the entire bill. So with that, I'll call up our...
Why don't we move on your amendment, amendment at this point. Members, Representative Hornstein moves D1 amendment, which puts the bill in the shape that the author wishes us to contemplate and act on today. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Hornstein.
Okay, and with that, I'd like to call up, I'll step aside here. We have a panel of parents that have been working on this bill both in the House and Senate, and I'll let them speak to it. So you'll just say your name for the...
Good afternoon and welcome.
Oh, thank you. My name is Susan Thompson, and I live at 685 Old Long Lake Road in Orono.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Beck Erickson, and my address is 57 Thomas Avenue South in Minneapolis.
It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm a mom, and I'm here with a group of moms, and we're on a mission. We want all Minnesota students to read by third grade. And I'm pleased to be in this room with you and with members from higher ed and with teachers and curriculum directors, because we all share the same platform. It's education. And I'm hopeful that in our conversation today that we can bring the best to this bill. There may be suggestions, there may be amendments, and so when we leave, I hope that we can bring the very best to this bill. I'm a mom. I work with a group of moms on a mission. We started many years ago out in our school districts across the metropolitan area, and we started as helpers out in the schools, volunteering to help teachers. Some of us went back and got training, you know, to be tutors, and stayed committed to our public schools. We believe in them. And then we went on and we formed an advocacy group, a parent advocacy group. We set up a Yahoo site. We have over about 140 parents. We had about 3 a month. And our only focus is really to share our collective wisdom to help families, to help their kids who struggle in reading. And so, you know, every other month we hold a session. Education is the focus. What can we help? What can we share to help them? And we once a year hold a community-wide meeting. And out of that kind of community organizing effort, we met some of the representatives here today in a meeting back in December 2006. And out of that meeting, which was a very large attendance, legislation developed. And we came here about a year ago, and we provided testimony. And we were invited after that testimony by Karen Ballmer at the Board of Teaching to take our legislation and set it aside and to join a Board of Teaching task force. And we were pleased with that invitation. And so a parent, a principal, and a school teacher were added to a task force at the Board of Teaching, which had primarily higher ed professors with a lot of expertise in reading on it. And we spent 2007 working on this task force. And it was a task force full of strong passion, strong controversy. And eventually, by the end of 2007, in my opinion, we reached an immovable stalemate. And our charge was to come up with new reading standards for our pre-service teachers. And in my opinion, we were at a stalemate. So I'm a mom on a mission that all third grade students will lead. And so respectfully, while continuing to work on the task force, I circled back to our legislators here who had authored legislation and shared the dilemma we were in, and it was during interim. And during interim, we proceeded to have a series of meetings. We had a meeting where higher ed professors were invited. We had a meeting where teachers were invited. We had a meeting with principals and parents and students. So we had a lot of ongoing conversation in the interim about our passion, our intention, and the stalemate continued. And out of these conversations, about a month ago, we still presented. And I have to thank all of you. I'm a mom. I don't really understand the business here well. But I will tell you that the pending legislation has been remarkably helpful, because as recently as yesterday, we have dissolved the stalemate in the Board of Teaching Task Force, and we have an emerging, a strong emerging consensus on the proposed rules for all licensure categories on the topic of reading. And I really want to commend Karen Ballmer. She did a fantastic job as Executive Director of the Board of Teaching. And I also want to recognize Debbie Dillon as a professor at the University of Minnesota, because she took strong leadership. And believe me, it's been a task force with intense passion and controversy. And so now we're at a point where I think we're very close. Thank you for the pending legislation. We're very close to having agreement on rule. And we have one task left, and it's a really hard task, and we need your help. we have to select the test, and I understand, though I'm sure Karen's here and put it at the Board of Teaching should speak to these details, but as I understand it, there will be a test required to evaluate the standards that are being proposed, and we need to select a test that our police service will be required to take, and that's the Board of Teaching issue. And having it gone through this experience over this year on the Board of Teaching and lived in this stalemate and knowing the parties that are passionate about the issue, I am 100% convinced that we will relive that same stalemate unless we get strong policy direction to bring the parties together that are relevant to this decision and encouraged to have a discussion. I know late last night, legislators that are involved in this legislation were talking about having a meeting right after this hearing and inviting the key players from higher ed, the Board of Teaching, and the people that get involved in this decision to address the process that will be used for selecting the test. And that out of that conversation, we could come back if she should choose to pass this to the next committee, come back to the next committee with an amendment that would address that one issue. And then I think we are home free, and I'm delighted to tell you that the proposed rules align very well to the Minnesota reading statute that you all put in effect in about 8 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Ms. Harrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I was going to just make sure, I'm sure everyone has a copy of the bill, but just to review, the key components of the bill are that 122A is more clearly defined in terms of the five strands of effective reading, and those are from the National Reading Panel 2000. There's the booklets available for further reading and enjoyment, but those are phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. A full broad spectrum of reading components that were identified by the National Reading Panel. It also directs the State Board of Teaching to require that teacher candidates prior to their licensure are competent in these five areas, and these would be preschool and elementary teachers up through licensure K-6, so that when they go into the classrooms and work with our children, obviously they have the competencies to teach children in terms of all five components. And then it directs further directs teacher preparation programs to, of course, prepare their pre-service candidates in these five areas so that they can demonstrate competency. One area of competency will be one way that competency will be demonstrated is through the passing of a test. It's an assessment test, and it would be replacing tests that's currently required by licensed teachers. But again, just want to bring that to your attention that there already is a test that pre-service teachers take prior to their licensing, and this would be replacing that test. And of course, the reason for the replacement is that the new test would align closely with the five strands and would also align, of course, with the statute that we've had in effect since 2000. There are some other specifics of the bill where we're wanting to support our pre-service teacher candidates. We know what works in reading, and we want to get that information and that science of reading to our students as soon as possible. So there's some programs where we'd like to encourage a private-public match of scholarships. We want to encourage pre-service teachers as early as this fall to take the test on a pilot, in kind of a pilot position, so that they can see, how am I doing? You know, have I completed in my 3 years of pre-service? Do I have the skills to pass this test? Do I have competency in these areas? And then they'd have their fourth year of pre-service to finish and complete. I'm sure that would include their student teaching, and then they would take the test prior to licensure. There are programs established that would also help and could teach teachers these skills and provide scholarships to those programs if the teacher pre-service candidate would choose to do that. And then, most importantly, speaking to the point that Susan Thompson clarified, the test would be selected by the Minnesota Department of Education, and it would come back to the adoption of the reading rules that she referred to that are that we're happy to say are moving along briskly in the last number of weeks. Those rules and the tests that are adopted would come back to the legislature at the beginning or prior to next session, and for oversight and approval by the committees in the legislature that have jurisdiction over K-12 education. And I want to emphasize how important that is, because we have been in this process, and it's been a privilege to work in the process and to be able to make such a difference on behalf of our students. But I absolutely can tell you that none of this would have been possible. The parties would not have come together and worked on behalf of our students had we not had legislators who are intimately familiar with this issue and have taken leadership to become involved as policymakers on how our students are going to teachers are going to teach their students to read in the state of Minnesota. Excuse me. I choose Bette Erickson. I'm a parent, and I have two children, and one of my children was a non-reader in third grade, and I was in a desperate position, a hopeless and desperate position as a parent, because as you know, when you have the privilege of being a parent, your hopes and dreams are in your children. And I knew that as a third grade non-reader, her future was dim. She was in a small group with other students in her class, six or seven students that would be pulled out in second grade for additional reading instruction. I'm happy to say today that because of her hard work and because of the strong advocacy on the part of myself and my husband, our daughter is a freshman in college. I'm here today because I'm afraid to say that her classmates who were in her Title I support program in that elementary school in Minneapolis are today not in college. The outlook for children who are not reading proficiently by third grade is dismal. I have an elementary education degree. I was never taught how to teach children to read. I have an elementary education degree, and I didn't know what to do with my own daughter when she didn't know how to read. And I turned to the teachers, and I was desperate. I wanted my daughter to read, and she had a string of pearls around her neck the first day of kindergarten, and she was eager to read and succeed and do everything that it took. But she needed effective, appropriate instruction, and I'm here to tell you that in a Minneapolis public school that I was in at that time, the teachers simply did not have the skills to teach her how to read. Half of the kids in the class were succeeding. A couple others were on the fence, and there were six to seven classmates in her second grade classroom who were not reading by the end of second grade. I've since taken advanced training in reading, and I now work with students who are struggling to read. And I'm telling you, you can teach, we can teach, I can teach children to read, but there are certain strategies, and you have to know what the skills are, and you have to know how to assess the student. And I, as a professional, had to be taught how to do that. I'm here today because I also have a mission, and my mission is to avoid the pain that my daughter felt through years of not being able to read, and the pain that we experienced as a family as we tried to support her in that effort. This is a passionate issue, and I appreciate the conversation, first of all, that this the presentation of this bill has brought, because parties have been forced to talk to each other, and I understand and I believe that only good will come for the students in Minnesota. What I find interesting is that although this is a field of education where we say we want our decision making to be based on sound data and we want research-based best practices used, and yet when policy is put in place or introduced that requires just that, research-based best practices, we receive incredible resistance. I'd like to encourage you today as policymakers to seize the opportunity to create real change for our students in Minnesota. I'd like you to add your voice and to change the status quo. Here is the status quo. 40%.
Sir, I'm just going to interrupt very briefly. There's a number of people who want to testify on this bill, and we have another bill up, and so I'm just going to ask you and other folks to perhaps just speed up a little bit to make sure that we get all the testimony in, if that's okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. 40% of our fourth grade students read proficiently. 60% of our students do not read proficiently. And 27%, or half of those students, read below basic level. So that basic level, 30% of the students that are in our children's classrooms are not going to be readers as adults. Our teachers need the skills to teach our students to read, and our teachers want the skills to teach our students to read. And yet, unfortunately, less than 5% of current course credits in Minnesota four-year colleges and universities focus on preparing teachers to teach students to read. We need to connect the dots between those two. We need to realize that the quality and type and competency of our elementary teachers has a direct impact on the success of our students in our classrooms. It's the right of every child to learn to read. It's the responsibility of the adults to see that it happens. And I firmly believe and encourage your support of House File 3780 so that we can make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. I appreciate it. Representative Hornstein, do you have others who are testifying on behalf of the bill?
Mr. Chair, no.
The members, are there any questions of the proponents of the bill at this point? Representative Erickson, and then Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Thompson and Ms. Erickson, for coming. It's when we have moms out there who are working hard for their children that we get to hear stories like this. Thank you, Representative Hornstein, for your lead-all. That was a great improvement, because I certainly have heard from teachers in the field who did not want to be dictated to as to how they should teach reading or that they should be tested. My question to either Ms. Erickson or Ms. Thompson is, I'm a part of the Reading Task Force, and we're working toward an end. Do you not think we can accomplish what's in this bill in that way, instead of having to place this in session law and, work that direction? Would you just respond to that, would you please?
Yeah, and I have seen you at the meetings, and I've appreciated you. I'm sorry. Appreciate your input along with Representative Benson and other legislators. My firm belief, and I tell you this deeply with confidence in my heart, that we will not be able to select a test without getting into a gridlock or a stalemate again. And so I think we either need to have this process that we've outlined, or we need to have a brainstorm that invites the really relevant decision makers to a conversation. And I think that's what this pending legislation has done, is it's bringing people to a table. So I think if you can help encourage us to get together, have the conversation in the net today, there are people available today, tomorrow, and get some real focus on it, I think we can resolve this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for a follow-up. Ms. Erickson, have you and Ms. Thompson talked to the staff of the Colleges of Education and asked them some questions about why what we presently have in statute, which I was a part of helping legislate 122A.18 subdivision 2A, may not be fulfilled as the candidates for teacher ed are working through, or teacher licensure are working through the program?
Have we talked?
Yes, sir.
Currently, the board is teaching. Currently, the board is teaching monitors compliance.
of the existing syllabi, and I sat at the Board of Teaching and read every syllabi from the 28 teacher preparation programs submitted. They show compliance. The standard in the statute right now requires that the candidates be given exposure, given instruction. And so really what we're looking at is, you know, trying to have a test that would, you know, involve minimum competency level.
Representative Ward, then Representative
Welty. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hornstein and testifiers, thank you for bringing forward this bill. I come from a district that has a wonderful literacy collaborative, and I think you were invited up there to participate and see it with Senator Sultan and Senator Wilson.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me what a well-run, and as a former educator, what an impact that a well-run literacy collaborative to teach our kids to read can do, from everything from reducing special ed numbers significantly, you know, to just our most gifted students just blocking, just as you both have mentioned. My question is about kind of same as along lines with Representative Erickson. What models do we have in the higher ed that we use for literacy collaborative for reading program? My understanding is that there's a model at the university that is the single model, but yet there are a number of successful models out there. And I too thank you for the, I've been getting a lot of emails from educators that are saying, you know, we don't need more testing. My literacy collaborative person that, when she saw this bill, said, no, don't support it. And because of the testing components of it, now the last one I got from her was, it sounds much better. I encourage you to support this bill. So I thank you for that. But again, the models that we have at higher ed, can you speak to that? And the differences of the model that we have in my school district is different than the model that's offered at the university, at UM.
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. We also will have some testimony, I believe, a little bit later from higher ed individuals, and we should, no, it's quite all right. We should revisit that question at that time. Ms. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I know Beth Swenson, I've been in communication with her, I know the model you're referring to, and I think what she's passionate about is the fact that there is a loop that connects higher ed to schools, and that the schools have professional communities where they have literacy directors that work with teachers that are in the students, and it feeds back to higher ed. And I think that's really an important ingredient, that we create the ongoing communication between what's going on in the classroom and higher ed. And I know that higher ed will speak to that, and some of them do have that model.
Thank you.
Members, I have four individuals who have asked to testify on the bill. John Alexander from Groves Academy. Nancy Sears from Rochester Reading Center.
Mr. Chair, may I offer? They came to answer questions to help us, and so they defer on comments.
Okay, very well. And the same with Mary Kurtzoff?
No, she was.
Okay, so Ms. Kurtzoff from the Edina Public Schools and Deborah Dillon from the University of Minnesota. You can come forward. Ms. Kurtzoff, welcome.
Welcome. Hi, my name is Mary Kirkoff, and I'm the literacy coordinator of the Edina Public Schools. Hi, John.
Hello.
And I was also, when John was president of Education Minnesota Edina, he appointed me to the professional development arm of Education Minnesota Edina. So it's nice to see you here.
Tried to hide Representative Benson in the corner, but one good Edina person can always find another good Edina person.
I happen to be a Hopkins mom. So I'm also here with the mom hat on, and I'm also here primarily at the request of the Association of Metropolitan Superintendents and their districts.
You're welcome.
And they requested that I come and talk with you. As a literacy coordinator of the Edina Public Schools, I want you to know that I'm a licensed reading teacher. I'm a licensed special education teacher with multiple licenses in that area, and I'm also an elementary teacher. I've also held early childhood licenses in the state of Minnesota. I've been teaching for 34 years. I work in the schools in Edina as the elementary language arts specialist, as the intervention targeted services coordinator, as a mentor of new reading teachers, as the liaison for early childhood through high school. I'm the resource. I'm also on the leadership development team of our response to intervention model, and I mentor our literacy coaches. So I wear a broad hat and have the opportunity to discuss literacy issues with a broad range in our community. I'm speaking today to ask you not to support House File 3780. The Minnesota Board of Teaching and the Minnesota Department of Education can continue the work they're engaged in, which will promote increased student success. Everyone in Minnesota wants their children reading by the end of third grade. No one more so that month than mothers who are also reading teachers. The Board of Teaching Task Force is in the final stages of gathering information and creating a comprehensive recommendation. They reflect the entire community of parents, teachers, researchers, universities. And all of those participating, I know that they have solicited input from their constituents because in some of the groups I have been involved in professionally, I have been sought out for input. They take that response and have tried to forge the best program that they can and the best recommendations. Any licensure requirements that they recommend, I'm confident, will be comprehensive and reflect all the scientifically based methods of instruction that are there. And as you can imagine, with the licensure I currently hold, and I am also an adjunct at the University of St. Thomas in Hamlin in reading, I have extensive training in many forms of reading instruction. And I know that those forms work for different learners at different times in different ways. Therefore, I believe the Board of Teaching's recommendations will be comprehensive to cover all learners. The language arts standards go into review next year, and those standards do drive very specifically what we teach our students in, and as importantly, how we engage in professional development in our school districts. School curriculum is based on those standards and supported by targeted, rigorous, accountable professional development that best meets the needs of Minnesota students in those districts. Daily, I engage with elementary, special education, and reading professionals on how to reach all young learners with scientifically based instruction. This work occurs in the Edina Public Schools and with colleagues in the reading community through the Minnesota Reading Association, Twin Cities Reading Council, networks, and yes, even blogs and wikis where we write to each other on a daily basis. The growth of good reading instruction occurs as teachers and districts sit down and tackle the scaffolding of reading instruction with the good training that they have had and that they continue to get. We study, we coach, we mentor each other, we analyze data, and we use problem-solving teams on each child to help Minnesota children learn to read. I can tell you over the 34 years I've taught, telling stories about what happened with children 15 years ago does not reflect what is currently happening in our schools. Do children continue to struggle? Yes, I'm also the parents of children who have been labeled exceptional. But the Board of Teaching's recommendations, I believe, will address all children's needs. A teacher licensure does not equate with quality effective teaching and the problem solving that's needed to help our students who are struggling to learn to read. The fiscal implications are also of concern to me. In the Edina schools, we have just studied intensively a review of every method and material we use in the district to see if it meets the scientific basis. The teachers are required to teach phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension skills, and yes, so that is explicit direct instruction. And in every school district that I'm here representing today, that level of competency is required. Professional development based on the assessment of our students and looking at individual students should drive where our professional development dollars go. That is the best impact for our students and the way we can monitor if we're getting the desired student achievement. I'm asking you not to support this bill at this time, but to honor the work of our Commissioner of Education, our Minnesota Department of Education as they go into the language arts reviews next year, and the current Board of Teaching work. please allow them to continue their work without the constraints in this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Kirkhoff. And I take it you heard Representative Erickson's first question about the flexibility of the existing statute. So it would be your belief that that we have in place the necessary language and flexibility to be able to accomplish the goals that you're currently involved in?
It would, and the Association for Metropolitan School Districts asked me to share that.
Very well. Ms. Dillard, welcome.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm a professor at the University of Minnesota in the area of reading and language arts and the Guy Bond Endowed Professor. I'm also a mom, and I wanted to represent that in terms of my 10-year-old daughter, who is in the public school. And I wanted to also let you know that I have been a professional for 30 years. I taught school in the elementary level as well as at the college level. Currently, I'm working on research projects in the Minneapolis Public Schools and also the surrounding schools to try to develop better reading assessments for children who struggle. I'm here today not only to speak from my perspective as a reading researcher, but also to represent various groups from across the state of Minnesota who are not going to be able to speak today for themselves. That would include teachers, administrators, teacher educators, reading researchers, and the thousands of Minnesota students and teachers who work with them and their parents. It's important, I think, first to recognize that this bill was put forth by individuals who care deeply about children and who are listening to a group of passionate parents and professionals who really want the best for their children. It is important to note that educators and researchers like me are listening to these parents, and we are responding to them. But we're also responding to a broad base of constituents. Everyone wants the best for all students and parents. I have sought to reach out and offer compromise language and to work with others, and I commend the parents for also trying to do that very thing. However, it's my contention and that of my colleagues that the bill, 3780, will not improve reading instruction or achievement scores. What I am uniquely able to bring to this conversation is the ability to recognize and to respect passionate individuals and what they bring to the conversation, but to draw attention to the solutions from research. In my daily work as a scholar at the University of Minnesota, I bring research to bear from many different perspectives to craft policy and practice. To really move forward in education in equitable and just ways, we must use the research to improve the teaching of reading and instruction in our schools. And from a researcher's perspective, let me speak to the specifics in the bill and why it will not improve reading instruction and why I respectfully cannot support or recommend the contents of the bill to you. The bill is focused on testing reading teachers. It does not offer anything new except this and definitions of the already defined five areas of reading. There is no research that proves that testing teachers in their knowledge of reading components improves reading instruction or raises test scores. What is not in the bill is the research that we do have on what does improve reading instruction practice and student achievement. Research indicates that school-wide professional development, as Mary has described, based on teachers determining specific student needs, working together to tailor instruction to fit learning issues, and partnering with parents and professionals, does improve reading achievement. One of our representatives mentioned the Literacy Collaborative and Dr. Swenson's work. I'm very familiar with that. As a professor at Purdue University before I came here, I worked very closely with Reading Recovery and with professors at the university, at Ohio State University. I know this model, and I know that the kinds of things in this model are in our current teacher preparation programs, as well as in the work that we do with professionals and professional development. I can also tell you that there are other Minnesota educators in this room that can speak to long-term professional development and the impact it has on children's test scores and how this is what makes a difference. What is not in the bill are the important research-based efforts taking place with the Minnesota Board of Teaching Reading Task Force. This effort is focused on developing new reading standards for teachers in Minnesota, and I should note that it is more than just standards for pre-service teachers. One of the most unique features about the Minnesota Board of Teaching work is that it is going to span a trajectory of what beginning teachers need to know in the area of reading, all the way through what teachers need to know in their first years of instruction, through advanced levels, and then teachers who would provide leadership and reading coaching to their colleagues, such as what Mary does. It's very comprehensive, it is research-based, and it is for all levels of licensure. What I think is unique also about the Reading Task Force is that it's been comprised of many, many stakeholders with many different perspectives. And when you have that, researchers, teachers, parents, and others, you're naturally going to have lots of conversations based on the knowledge base that people bring to this process. And that has certainly taken us some time to work through things. But I would say that the characterization of stalemate perhaps is a bit strong. What I found is that we've had to work through some difficult things across the table, and that these things have been worked through in very positive ways. And I just want to note, too, that compromises are reached because people reach across and work together, and that legislation and that those sorts of things really don't press people. It's people working together that make a difference. I will tell you that the Reading Task Force work is grounded in scientifically based comprehensive reading. It is grounded in our past legislation that we already have. The new standards will focus on the five components of reading, but they will focus on more. They will also move beyond this to focus on students' critical thinking skills, the ability to read materials in social studies, English, biology, technical fields, and also one of the most worrisome areas we have right now in student achievement in reading, and that is students' will to want to read better. And this is in the area of motivation. This group is working hard. I'm confident that these Board of Teaching Minnesota Reading Standards will improve reading instruction in Minnesota. It's critical that we support the work of the Board of Teaching in this task force and allow it to move forward. And I believe that this work is going to move forward in timely fashion. Meeting the needs of all Minnesota readers requires broad partnerships and the best of what reading research has to offer us to support this goal. Teachers, reading researchers, administrators, many parents and community members from across the state, we stand ready to work side by side with those who desire to partner with us on this shared goal. We support Minnesota children, and I can tell you one 10-year-old that I know and hold dear that will benefit from these Board of Teaching Reading Standards. I thank you, and I stand open to answer any questions you have about reading research, reading teacher preparation, and the Board of Teaching work.
Thank you, Dr. Dillon. We do have two questions for either both or one of you. Beginning with Representative Benson and then Representative Quay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and nice to see you again tonight. It's been quite a while since I was allowed to move into the other world from Madonna, but I'm glad that you're still working and making a difference. But I did have a question for you and also for Ms. Dillon. And I want to preface this by saying I want to be careful because having been a classroom teacher all those years, I know as well as any that when directives start coming our way, lots of times there are no resources to back them up. Or many times a lack of understanding as to why these objectives cannot be met yesterday. On tomorrow, so I want to be careful to be cognizant of that. But I would like to ask Dylan or you, what specifically in this legislation will restrain what all of us agree is the objective that we have to improve reading? What is it in this legislation which, if I use the word restraint, I believe you use, will make it more difficult. And I want a concrete sentence or line or phrase, please, if you've got one.
Is Kirchhoff or Dr. Dillon?
I'll try to do that.
By the way, Dr. Dillon.
The Board of Teaching process that's in place naturally will be able to move us towards standards that then will drive any sorts of assessments to prematurely put forth assessments, particularly with the legislation which actually has test specifications embedded in the language in it currently, would be inappropriate and invalid to the process that's taking place with the Board of Teaching and would not match the current standards being developed.
Mr. Chairman. Well, are there any listed here with which the Board of Teaching or anyone else would disagree?
Dr. Dillon or Ms. Griffoff?
Representative Miami. I would say that at this point in time it would be premature to be able to say whether we would agree or not agree, because the Board of Teaching standards as they're being developed are comprehensive standards, and from those would be test specifications or assessment specifications that would need to be developed with professionals. And those would dictate the kinds of things that we would be putting in any sort of assessment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, just to follow up on this, we do all agree, I think, that simply having someone being administered a test does not necessarily indicate the competency. But can I ask this question? Would it be possible for someone to fail on all the questions relating to reading instruction competency and still receive a teaching certificate?
Dr. Ms. Kirkhoff.
I know that at least in the schools where I am an adjunct, we would not pass people through courses if they were not competent in the coursework. And when they're in their field study work being guided by an existing classroom teacher, you know, we have our student teachers even work with literacy coaches, they would not be passed through that work and they would not be approved nor recommended by the university for licensure.
Representative, we will hear in a minute from Karen Baumer from the Board of Teaching, and that might be a good opportunity for you also to ask questions.
All right. Is it possible that someone could pass the test without passing the section of the test relating to reading instruction, regardless of whether or not they may or may not have slipped through the other parts of preparation for teaching? Is it possible to pass that test to get the teacher certification without succeeding in those sections, no matter how large or small they might be, directly related to competency in teaching reading?
Dr. Jones.
Chairman, I can't imagine passing that test without having competency in that subtest area. I do not at this point know how the subtest scores are broken out, but I cannot imagine that.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick follow-up, and thank you for your indulgence here, but I was involved in this a lot, and I feel kind of a responsibility to probe it a little more. And it's my understanding that the present testing does not have a very large number of test questions related to reading instruction competency. And that the instruction generally for preparation for K-6 only involves about 5% of the course curriculum. The last question really has to do with the fact that we are facing a situation that's been going on for a long time with 60% of children, for whatever reason, not being able to read at grade level by third grade. I mean, is this not an indictment on all of us? And we're not just relating to teachers in the classroom who always get abused for all the social maladies that society places on them. But when I hear that, well, we're working on this, well, it's going to come. But each year that goes by, we have another group of children who've lost their opportunity. I mean, if, we could have heard the same thing, couldn't you think, 20 years ago? And nothing happened. So, you know, I understand the reluctance of having an institution like this here, and I'm the last one who believes in mandates from local school districts. Let me tell you, I've been trying to get rid of as many of them around here as I could. But there does come a time when nothing has happened for 20 or 30 years, for whatever reason, to move those numbers in a better direction, that someone has to step up and do something. And I am passionate about this, Mr. Chairman, and I'm worried about kids who are going to lose their opportunity to participate in our society to the level that they ought to be able to, and that they can, with proper instruction, and it has not come across. I taught reading in the guidance schools. I have a master's degree, and I have a major degree in language arts, and I taught. And as you know, I was not prepared to deal with these children who have reading difficulties. And I went to a good university. And I'm not convinced it's changed that much.
John, in the 5 years since you left, or when you left, we have been in secondary reading programs. We have put in multi-layered intervention. We need to look at what's happening right now in the schools. I wouldn't want anybody to look at the housing market and talk about it based on what happened 15 years ago in relationship to right now, and I hope we aren't looking at our schools. You look at what's going on in our schools right now with response to intervention and the problem-solving teams looking at kids reading No Child Left Behind has significantly impacted the schools. And the significance, we've got problems. I'm not saying there are not children that are struggling. We go, we sleep over it at night. Right. We work long hours trying to remedy it. But this bill is not going to contribute to solving that. The work of the Board of Teaching will.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will have to be quite honest at this point in time. I'm feeling very confused about this bill. And what I would like to know is if you, Dr. Dillon, if you could tell us what is the aggregate score of third graders in terms of reading right now in the state of Minnesota? What is the percentage that are achieving where they should be on the reading test?
Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Dillon.
Sure. I apologize. I did not come prepared to be able to talk to those specific figures. But what I can tell you is that there has been great progress made. I think some of the statistics that have been shared today may not have been leading us in the direction that's a little bit more positive in the state of Minnesota. With the work that's been done with Reading First, with the Literacy Collaborative, and with other very, very fine initiatives in the area of reading, we are actually seeing improvement in children's achievement scores. So I think that the picture that's being portrayed, we need to be very, very cautious about. I will say that against the backdrop of the fact that our demographics in Minnesota are changing dramatically. We have huge influx of children from many, many diverse backgrounds, and this is a new complexity, as you can imagine, that certainly impacts reading. But the picture being portrayed of proficiency and test scores being low is not necessarily the complete picture. If I also might respond to some other questions that were raised earlier.
Certainly. And then I'm going to ask Karen Baumer to come and offer her testimony as well. Dr. Dillon.
Yes. I would just like to also speak to the fact that a lot has changed in the last few years with the legislation that was provided by this body and also with the federal No Child Left Behind. There have been incredible changes in the universities in terms of how they prepare teachers. We have stepped up greatly preparing teachers to really know the five components of reading and more. And I sense that when they leave our institutions, one of the things that we need to be assured of is that they're not only learning the knowledge base, but they're also putting that into practice in very fine practical experiences. We too want to improve upon this. We don't have them as long as we would like to, but one of the things that we're looking at is that there has to be very good mentoring programs when those teachers go out of the schools and continued professional development. And this is where we are reaching across from higher ed and working in partnerships with our public school colleagues. And this is something that we're going to be continuing to work on. But I have to tell you that there is very good instruction taking place, and there are also very strong partnerships that have been formed across colleges of teacher preparation. I've worked with the Bush Foundation on a grant where four institutions worked together to reform their curriculum in the preparation of teaching. We've come to agreement on assignments that are used across these areas and other sorts of assessments. I see this as the stepping stone of many things like this that are going to continue to happen. So I would respectfully say that many excellent teachers are being prepared in the area of reading in our state. We are very lucky in that regard.
Thank you, Dr. Dillon. Representative Squires, I think you had a follow-up, and then I do want to ask Ms. Palmer, why don't you come on down and and we'll hear from you as well. Representative Swartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am a teacher. I am an AP English teacher, actually. And I am very, very proud of the quality of teachers that I work alongside. So I do not question the fact that we are developing good teachers in the state, and I would like to think that I'm a part of that cadre. But I guess I'm needing to know the nitty-gritty here. I want to know how many hours of teaching or how many courses of teaching reading are required at the university level. And I would think that maybe Ms. Bomber could answer that. But I want some specifics. We can talk about, you know, the wonderful training and all that, but I want to know the specifics.
Why don't we ask Ms. Palmer to join in on the conversation here at this point. I've been trying to get her to her testimony here. And please feel free to offer your testimony, but then we can certainly circle back to Representative Swale's question. Or you can begin with Representative Swale's question, however you wish.
Great, thank you. For the record, I'm Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Thank you for this opportunity. As you can see, and you knew before this hearing today, there is a great deal of passion around the area of reading instruction, and there should be, and that's a good thing, and that's a sign of health in our state that people care this passionately. So that'd be the foundation of my comments. I'm going to provide some broader context and then circle back to a couple of the key points that there have been some really critical questions raised this afternoon. The work of the Board of Teaching is to set licensure standards, the licensure rules. Within each of those licensure rules are a series of standards. Those standards are critically important because they effectively drive what happens in all teacher preparation programs, and they drive what happens on the entrance, the testing requirements, and the tests that are required to enter the field of teaching. The board knows that our current licensure rules are deficient. You will not hear me argue that our rules as they stand today are fine. They're not. They're not fine when it comes to reading instruction and preparation of teachers. They're deficient, and that's why we put this task force together a year ago and why we've been working. It's not been easy work, as you've heard from others already, but I do believe it's been fruitful work. So to that end, I'm just going to give you a few pieces of the roadmap that we're working on, and I offer that to you in your consideration. We are have been working as a task force, and now are ready to roll out some draft recommendations for rule to a larger stakeholder group. We've got 65 people coming on Monday of next week that represent, I believe it's 23 organizations from content area organizations, the Council of Teachers of Mathematics to Early Childhood Association to very concentrated reading organizations to the Minnesota Rural Education Association and the like. So we are pursuing our process, and we'll continue to do so. What happens when we have licensure rule, just to build a little more of the base of our context, when those rules are adopted, they're comprised of standards. So standards, as I said, drive the test. Your questions, Representative Benson, are fantastic questions. Is it possible that someone could take a test, an elementary teacher could take a test, pass every, they're all good questions, but could they take this test, pass everything but the reading portion and still become licensed to be an elementary teacher? Today the answer, unfortunately, would be yes. The test that we have is driven from the elementary standards that we have in place, and it's very little having to do with direct reading, preparation, and instruction. We know that that is deficiency. What we're working on and the draft that we have now ready to roll out to stakeholders is about 3-4 pages long of standards that we are going to ask our stakeholders and eventually the Board of Teaching to bless. And we'll get feedback first and probably end up tweaking some along the way. But then we'll go back, get those into rule. So then, with the new standards in place, that will create a different paradigm and a different reality as far as testing. One of the other things I'll just note this is a conversation we've had in different areas, social studies. You know, right now, the reality is that it's conceivable that a teacher could take a social studies test, fail everything in economics, and still pass. So this is not, we think about these things, we're trying to think better about how to make sure that those things don't happen. If it means disaggregating the test scores by subjects for elementary teachers. There's health education, there's reading, there's mathematics, there's social studies and science. Do we look at disaggregating that data so that we know by discipline how they're doing? That's certainly something that we talk about and need to think about and need to make sure that we have on our radar screen. So that, I hope, provides some context. It's, our current state is not as we'd like it to be. Now then you ask, well, how long is it going to take to get this all changed? You're talking about rules. What's the timeline? We don't, if there is a crisis, it's not the kind of thing we can sit and wait years to figure out. Well, if we start our rulemaking process this spring, which is our intention, and at the May Board of Teaching meeting, the rulemaking process generally takes 12 to 18 months. So presumably the fall of 09, we could have licensure rules ready to go. Then we need to get those embedded into programs approved and the test to align. So you need to know that the realistic timeline is probably 2010 before that. The new standards and the new rules are in place and effective, and with new cohorts coming through. So that you need to have that transparency for your consideration. But I do think that the process that we have in place is a strong one, that it will, when we're talking about tests, it will drive a quality assessment of the things that we want to have assessed for our reading teachers, or not reading teachers, here we're talking about elementary and early childhood in particular, and then there's another layer of testing that we don't currently do that relates to teachers who are in the field. That's currently not the work of the Board of Teaching. So I offer those as hopefully some contextual pieces that help in your deliberation, and I would be happy to stand for further questions.
Representative, I want to make sure your question at least gets answered, and then Representative
Bomber, Representative Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bomber, you are always so forthright with information, so could you please tell me how many courses in reading must a teacher complete and have competency in before this teacher is licensed?
Ms. Bomber.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swales, thank you. I apologize, I did not circle back to that question. The answer on that question is going to be a bit of a moving target, because and that's not an easy answer to give or to receive. The fact of the matter is that our institutions do things differently, and that's been part of the concern of many of our task force members, that there is a great deal of variability, and so what may be embedded in educational psychology class at one institution may be embedded into a reading course in another institution. I can tell you, for our secondary licensure programs, it's fairly consistent that we have, there's a reading and a content area course. When we get into the elementary and the early childhood, it could range from a couple of classes or many standards embedded across six courses. I think I misspoke. A couple of courses to many standards embedded across six courses. So we don't have that. Minnesota, for better or worse, does not have course and credit designations for teacher licensure. We have these standards. So it's maybe not a comfortable answer to the question, but that's what we have. And maybe our higher ed folks can give some examples, but that's our context.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. If I might just speak to that also, I think that is a really important thing to note, that the institutions do prepare teachers differently because we have different sorts of programs. At the University of Minnesota, we have what's called a post-baccalaureate program, where students go through and they have a degree, and then they come to us after that degree and get their licensure, get their coursework to earn licensure in teaching. So our teaching of reading does span across several courses, but we do that because our strongest people in the area of reading, for example, someone that served on the National Reading Panel report, is a professor in psychology, in educational psychology. But we work together across the university to figure out where those standards are best going to be met and what professors are best going to prepare teachers. That's worked through in concert. And then in other institutions, there's 9 credits of coursework, and others, they span across 2 years. St. Cloud State University, for example, has a marvelous undergraduate program, and they have their elementary ed majors where they span the reading across 2 years, because they have all sorts of very interesting practica where they go out in the schools and they learn what to do to work in the area of reading. So very different, each unique, but powerful models, and I think that's important that we have that flexibility.
Representative Demmer, Benson, Lane, and then we're going to move toward a vote. I'll have Representative Hornstein make some comments. I believe Ms. Thompson wants to also make a quick comment, and then we'll go to a vote. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very good conversation. There are two very broad questions that have been lurking in my mind, and I've had inquiries from both constituents as well as other colleagues. And there are two broad ones, and we've touched on those with this discussion about reading instruction in particular. One is, of course, we've got standards in place now, and how do we filter those back through to make sure our kids are getting the standards from our faculty in our high schools? And what's the connection with the people teaching in our high schools and our elementary schools to what's being taught to them at the university level? And how do we get that information? That's a question I've heard, is how do we filter back through to the colleges to teach the teachers we want them to teach our kids? And that's a question. And how do we get that done? How is it filtered back through? The second question is no child left behind. You know, what do we do with that? Should we throw it out? Should we keep it? Who knows what about it? There's lots of rhetoric out there. Some people know a lot about it. Some people don't. Everybody's got an opinion. And Dr. Dillon, you caught my attention when you said that changes are in place at the university regarding reading specifically in just the last couple of years because of No Child Left Behind. And maybe you can address those two broad-based questions with the specific year of reading and how that maybe has driven some change at the college level preparing teachers to teach. Does that make some sense?
Mr. Chairman.
I'll try to be very brief about this. First of all, I think that this, with the National Reading Panel report and No Child Left Behind, there's been a great deal of attention in reading and really ratcheting up the scientifically based reading instruction, really zooming in on what it is that we need to focus on and filtering out potentially some other things that we were doing in the area of reading preparation. I know that there still is a belief that there are what are referred to as the reading wars, that there are people called whole language people, and there are people called phonics people. And because of No Child Left Behind in the National Reading Panel report, that is not the case. We know how to teach reading, and there is a belief that, and a knowledge base of what that is, and that is being followed. That is in our legislation, the scientifically based reading component. So I want you to be assured that that is what universities are following. There is not a war. So if a war is put forward to you, that is just a false and a misnomer. The other question that you asked, and I'm afraid it just flew out of my head, was?
Well, I guess part of it was how does the way we teach our kids filter back into the university setting so that, and like our standards, because we now have standards we want our kids to live up to, and yet we have teachers who maybe weren't prepared for that, but how do we filter back into the university to teach our teachers what we want taught?
One of the things that universities pay very, very close attention to is that our students do not leave and matriculate from our institutions without knowing the K-12 standards. Those standards drive how we prepare teachers. There's a very close link. And then the Board of Teaching standards that we have been working on are in sync with those and will drive how we prepare teachers. And what's really great about the Minnesota Draft Board of Teaching standards for reading teachers is that they've been carefully laid out so that there's a trajectory that builds one standard from beginning teacher preparation to what advanced teachers need to know to what those who go on for more advanced knowledge need to know. So there's a very coherent process in place. That will be articulated through the very people and the institutions that are represented on this Board of Teaching. We already have plans in place where we're going to be having some academies this summer for professors in higher education where we're going to take these draft standards that will hopefully be passed through the Board of Teaching, and we're going to use those to drive curriculum reform at the university level. That same sort of thing is going to happen through the Minnesota Reading Association and various other associations. I have a handout of the associations that support this process who plan to immediately work to educate teachers and get the word out about the standards. And you know what's really great about them is that they're excellent and there's nothing controversial about them. They're going to be embraced for what they are, and this is going to bring together higher education, our colleagues in the K-12 schools. I see it a very, very positive outcome from this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to add maybe a note of levity here, which we all could use. There was a comment about a reference to the fact that 15 years ago, just about the time I was finishing my last class of reading, that things have changed since then, and I'm very hopeful it is. So I think this is a great moment to suggest to my colleagues here on the committee that they ought to support reinstitution of the Rule of 90, so that individuals like myself, who still may be laggering around in those hallways, unprepared to teach reading properly, have an opportunity to move on and thereby help to save our children from further failure. But more seriously, I do think that
my rule
85. My rule 70 maybe.
I didn't think this price in the reading.
But seriously, you know, in spite of all that, I always thought of myself, and I'm sure you all do too, as a professional in this field of education, very concerned about children, and that's why we went into the field. We didn't do it for money. And so all of us have a personal responsibility to be as prepared as possible. And I remember in some of those courses I took, when the professor handed out the syllabus, I was one of those crazy persons who read it all. I just thought we were supposed to, you know? Not everybody does, maybe, read it all, or acquire all those skills. And I'm just wondering, this is my question, I guess, if there isn't some directive here from the legislature which will impact, like the New Child Left Behind legislation apparently is, to move us off the dime, to be more prepared, what will? Why is this a bad thing, other than attack maybe on a person's feeling of professionalism? But I'm being told by outsiders here what I should be doing with my own profession and how we should be running our own daily reckoning. A lot of us have that feeling when we have somebody on the outside coming in and giving us some directives. I don't like the rule of a No Child Left Behind. I don't know what the federal government is doing, telling local school boards and states what to do. But maybe there is a benefit in some ways, you know? I'm kidding. Consequence. Don't take that down. But I'm just wondering, you know, some might say what we're really talking about here is the truth here. And that's the issue. I hope it's not, and I'm not suggesting it is. But some have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Ryan.
Well, what I think we're dealing with is a timeline situation. You've indicated that you're working through these standards and that you'd be basically done and ready to go the fall of 09, certainly 10, and this section becomes effective May 1st, 2010. But it also has the Commission of Education no later than 3 months from now adopting a reading instruction competence assessment. Boom, ready to go in 3 months. Seems to me that the process that you're undergoing, I would just suggest that you pay attention to what's coming forth here and add it to your work and get it done in a timeline that seems a little bit more conducive to how we do things.
Very good advice. Dr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to ask, maybe the maker of the bill, Mr. Representative Benson. I had to be in and out because I'm also at another committee hearing today, but in the beginning, is there a test going in this? I'm looking for it. It seems to be in here in the deleted section. Is there a test for teachers in the classroom?
Your question is for Representative Hornstein, right?
Yes, okay. I'm a co-author, but I'm not the author. No.
Okay, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Peterson, what we did on the delete all is delete required tests, additional required tests for existing teachers. But in terms of the specifics of that, maybe I'll ask one of the proponents of the bill to answer that. I don't know.
Thompson, very briefly, we're going to move to a vote here.
I just wanted to clarify that because that is an important one. And then I had one other question, but... Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the clarification is that the proposed test would only relate to pre-service candidates when they seek licensure. It would not apply to existing teachers in the field currently. Mr. Chair, I'm still, maybe I'm reading this wrong. Is that something you're going to put in, or is it already?
No, it was in, and it's now been taken out.
It has been taken out.
Are you looking at the delete everything amendment?
I must be looking at the wrong. I thought, I am looking at the delete everything.
Mr. Chair, I might add that there are some provisions in there for scholarship, and existing teachers may elect to take the initiative to apply for the scholarship if they want it, but there's nothing required in the standard of the law. It's there. It's just simply their choice.
Representative Walton.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I have a couple questions. First of all, if you go to subdivision 2, talking about a candidate taking a pretest, and I believe someone had said before that we're going to choose a test that's been developed in some other state. Is that correct?
The discussion.
Ms. Thompson, I'm going to interrupt for a second. Again, I want to apologize to the audience. There is a vote in capital finance right now on House File 3390, which is the health. Oh, that's the Loffler's bill, that's right.
Yeah,
and so, members, I do apologize, but this is a very good discussion. We'll continue the discussion and we'll wait till members come back to vote. But if you want to vote on Loffler amendment, now's the time, or bill, now's the time. Ms. Thompson.
Representative Welty, in the legislation, there are characteristics that the test instrument would have to comply with. And in the discussion of developing the bill, other test instruments were looked at, and there was a test instrument for a particular state that was examined. And the other thing I just wanted to clarify, if I might, Mr. Chair, is that I know there were statistics offered earlier in the day about the status of reading in the state of Minnesota, and they were from the NAEP scores, and they have not changed since 2003. If you look at the fourth grade performance in 2003-2007 as it relates to proficiency, it has not changed. The achievement gap in Minnesota is one of the very largest in the nation. So I think what I'm here to tell you is I do believe we have a reading crisis in our state. There are children that cannot get, that drop out of high school. They don't get to college. This is something real. And I know there's a difference of opinion as to how the panel's presenting it. And that's part of your window into the task force. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative
Walker. Okay. No, I think I just answered my first question when I was reading through this. So we're going to set our standards in the state of Minnesota after the candidate have gone through an approved reading instruction program, and then they can take the pretest. But only after they've gone through the approved reading instruction program can they take the pretest. Am I reading that correctly?
I'll thank you for the question. It is the candidate's choice whether they will take the pretest, completely voluntary. If they take the pretest, they can then go on and take a course to help them prepare to take the final test. It's completely their choice. And when they apply to take the program, they can apply to get a scholarship to take the course. It's completely their choice. They're not obligated to do that.
Thank you, Sarah Mariani. Mike, okay, I'm trying to figure this out. If we are saying that our teachers right now cannot teach adequately reading to many of the students, then if they're currently going through the teacher preparation programs that we believe are not adequately preparing them for the classroom, why are we going to be testing them in order to develop the pre-test standards?
Mr. Chair, Representative Malky, the way it's set up, it's for 1 fiscal year there is this opportunity to set up a pilot test where first year candidates might want to do a self-check on whether they have the competency that they would not have when they eventually have to take the competency test upon applying for licensure. So it's just a pilot test that they can self-initiate to help themselves.
Dr. Dillon.
I think you're uncovering what is some of the difficulties and problems in this proposed legislation. A much more valid, cleaner process would be to follow the Board of Teaching standards that are going to be set, which in all testing, from the Educational Testing Service at a national level to any other test, a test would be set based on standards that have been developed. And you would work with a test publishing company or an agency. You would develop a test based on that. You would then validate it through a specific procedure. I'm involved right now with a national reading test of where we're doing that. There's a process that you go through. And this bill does not outline that appropriately at all. And there's a great deal of money that is associated with many of the components of this bill. Where that money will come from, I don't know. But what I'm concerned about is there is absolutely no research data to support testing teachers in a knowledge base that is going to impact student achievement. What we do know is that money that is put into professional development and into cohesive programs like the one in Brainerd, the Literacy Collaborative, and others is what's going to make a difference. The other thing that's going to make a difference are these Board of Teaching standards that are going to be used in higher education so there's more consistency across the ways that we prepare teachers. This is what will make a difference in the quality of our teachers, not a reading test and not these costs associated with the testing and not the ways this is laid out, which are invalid in terms of test preparation.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and I think that this will be my last question and my comment. I do have concerns with putting together a test and having it out there and administered to our teachers coming out without the faculty knowing in the teacher preparation program what they have to test to in order to get these teachers prepared for an exam. If we're just going to be giving them an exam and the students may not be prepared for it, the instructors may not have taught the content required in that exam, I think that we could be setting up a bunch of students for failure. I was in the first class that graduated from college, and we had to take the pedagogy and we had to take the content in two separate tests, and it cost the student a significant amount of money to take the two tests and to go through that process. And our faculty in our colleges and universities were well aware of the tests that we were going to have to take, and so they were preparing us for that. By putting together this legislation and requiring a test when you do, I have serious reservations about that. And my final question then would be, are we talking about another test that teachers are going to have to take that's going to cost money, that's not going to be a part of their course that they're going to take? So right now, just as I understand it, at least the test I went through, I had to take a test before I went into the teacher preparation program, and then I had to take two tests when I left college in order to get my licensure. So now you're going to potentially pile on a third test. So the teachers would be tested four times before they leave the university.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Two things. The test that's being suggested here is evaluating a scope of knowledge that is defined in the Minnesota reading statute that's been in place for many, many years. So it's not like we're setting up a test that's going to surprise people. And I think it's clear testimony that our higher ed institutions are teaching what's required in the Minnesota reading statute. So the test is going to evaluate what you're already receiving. But the second question as to whether or not there's another test, I think Karen Bonner indicated that PRAXIS 0014 is not adequate, and there's a section of that test that evaluates reading. And so the test that we are suggesting would be a full standalone test that would evaluate a candidate's competency in reading instruction. Yes.
Dr. Dr. Jones?
I'd like to speak to that because working with students every day and knowing how much money it takes for them to go to school is of great worry to us. And yet at the same time, being able to satisfy our constituents to say that people are well prepared is really important. I think there are other assessments that can be developed that would not cost our students money, where we would still be able to have the same assurances that they have the knowledge base that they need. And secondly, I think it's really important for you to know that the test that's being proposed in this legislation is from the state of Massachusetts. And we've been in contact with their Department of Education. That test is right now undergoing massive revision because it's been perceived as not being coherent and comprehensive enough. And they've had a great deal of difficulties with the test. So they're reconstructing it. So what we're talking about is that we would be considering importing a test that right now is going to be rejected by another state. It would cost our students money, and there are much better ways of creating assessments that can get at the same level of knowledge at the university level. And so I just, you know, again, I recommend to you that there isn't anything that really is going to help our students in this bill.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Several of you have mentioned Beth Swenson's name, and she's... So as you mentioned Beth Swenson's name, that tells me that she's a respected literacy collaborative professional in the state of Minnesota. I just want to read a couple things that Beth said to me since she's one of my constituents, and it leads me to something that Representative Welty brought up and another question, two more questions. Beth says, I strongly believe that simply testing teachers on theory will not impact their teaching, only staff development and coaching will. So not just about the test, but also staff development and coaching will. Beth goes on to say, I'm worried about not having seen the test yet and understanding that it's put together, I believe, with some Massachusetts test. That's the state that we're referring to, I'm assuming, that no, that we're not talking about. And I know that that's a fairly progressive term in state of literacy. Beth talked to Senator Feltzman and Senator Olson, who both did just a tremendous amount of work on literacy collaborative this summer. And I think this bill is a companion bill to theirs over in the bill over in the Senate. And knowing that we don't here at the legislature, you know, we don't get things done all in one step. That was a big awakening to a professional legislator. You know, it doesn't happen today or tomorrow. It may take years. So it's a step-by-step process. So Beth goes on to say, I fully agree with Senator Felton that teachers come out of college without much understanding of how to teach reading, and I know our current teacher license has, as Representative Benson said, has very few questions on it about reading. I also know there's a core set of knowledge that teachers should have before they can start to put things into practice. I would hate to stop with just a test, but if this is the first step towards total reform of reading, so my question is this a step? Is this a step in the process that we need to take in order to... And then my second part of the question goes back to the Representative Welty's question about Barbara Taylor's model, and I'm going to be very specific. I'm not, you know, we don't have to be nice. Barbara Taylor's model is using all the... Yes, my understanding is reading recovery money are applied only to those that use Barbara Taylor's model. The literacy collaborative model that Swenson uses in Brainerd is exceptional. And so there's kind of a monopoly in the reading with programs within CT practices. So there's a two-part question that I need to have answered.
I think I can speak to that since Barbara Taylor is one of my colleagues, and Beth is a colleague of mine. First, let me speak to the first question that you had, and that is, will teachers be prepared? And do they need a test to be able to show that? And Beth's comment about the fact that there's more than test knowledge that teachers need to be prepared. And part of that is pedagogical knowledge, which they learn side by side with very fine teachers such as Beth and through professional development, which she mentioned. Now let me talk about the issue of Barbara Taylor's program and reading recovery. Barbara Taylor's program really is Reading First, and Reading First was federal money that our State Department was awarded, and then the contract was struck with the University of Minnesota, and in particular a program that Barbara developed before the Reading First money that was approved by the federal government. So there were some restrictions kind of in how that money had to be used. But that said, with the very fine program that you have that's based on the Ohio State model of reading recovery, that it's just an excellent program. Those two should be able to work side by side to make some very fine progress in reading. So the struggles that are between those, I'm not sure what it is, but I can tell you that the Reading First money and what's associated with Barbara Taylor's program is really what was struck for federal money that certain schools applied for grants under Reading First and moved forward in that area. But it probably is something that's completely separate from this notion of testing pre-service teachers that we're talking about. I hope that helps. Does that answer your question?
Ms. Palmer.
Thank you for allowing me to jump back in, Mr. Chair. And I thought it was appropriate to provide some context. Representative Wells, you asked some good questions, too, about the testing and the cost. And it's important to be very clear about what exists in statute, actually, right now, for testing. All of our testing requirements are in statute. And it's as you described, there is a series of basic skills in reading, writing, and mathematics. So that's generally done in one chunk. And that's one test. And then there's the practice two currently, which requires the two tests that you talked about, the pedagogy and the content. This test would be layered on top of that. And further elementary teachers, because of right now they're required to get a specialty, they actually have one additional test. So right now our elementary folks are, according to my calculations, spending about $430 in tests, and another one is generally going to be about $90. On top of that, my question about this test that we're talking about would not replace any test that we have currently. It cannot. Rather, it would be layered on top. And what would because those are required in statute. What will happen when we finish our rulemaking process? And that will drive a new test. So the elementary test that Ms. Thompson referred to will be reselected and redesigned to align with those new standards. So that it won't take that test off the table. It'll just so in my mind there will be a duplicity of testing because we will have the new test aligned to the new standard and then rule, and then under this legislation conceivably have an additional test that would have some overlap. So that is the testing context that I offer.
Representative Peterson, did you have a?
Back on this. Mr. Chair, and I'm looking at the language, and I do have to read all language, and I've been assured that it is just for, you know, those people going, that teachers going into the field. But as I read it, and I'll have to check with, I think, Ms. McBarson and see why, the language seems to me to affect all teachers as I read it. It does not seem to be just, I'm looking at subdivision 2C, and mostly Section 5, where it says Minnesota Reading, Instruction, Competence Assessment, and Pretest. And where it says Commissioner of Education, it reads to me, at least, that it's everybody, and I'm just concerned. I'll take the word that it's not for current teachers, but I think the language is confusing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, members, I believe that what Representative Peterson is saying is correct. There does seem to be language later on in Section 5 that is permissive, but the difficulty arises first in Section 5, Subdivision 1, beginning on page 4, line 24, and there's a direction to the Commissioner to adopt a competence assessment for all pre-kindergarten and elementary instructors consistent with Section 122A18, Subdivision 2C, and that is Section 4 in your bill. What Section 4 says is that the reading competence assessment must measure knowledge, skills, and ability of pre-kindergarten and elementary instructors, etc. So to the extent that it says all and it refers to a section on assessment for all pre-kindergarten and elementary instructors, the fact that you've got something later in Section 5 allowing districts to apply for grants really is somewhat inconsistent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, Representative Peterson and Ms. Larson, because that's not the author's intention or the proposer's intention. So I don't know if there's an oral amendment that I would be appropriate to get the bill in that shape, because that was our intention, was to exempt existing teachers, but clearly it's a little more complicated. This, I think, was drafted in the Senate, so
I'm going to suggest that we lay the Hornstein bill on the table. That'll give us some time to do that. It'll also give us time for our parent members to make their way back. They apparently will not be released by the other chair. And that way we can move on with House File 3624. We've had two individuals here who have sat for 2 hours wanting to testify on that. I apologize to them for that, but I think it would be appropriate for them to have an opportunity to speak about their bill, which I think is far less controversial than what we have before us, but perhaps far less complex might be the word. And so,
thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a good plan.
We're gonna table this. We'll take this back up today. Yes. So, members, with that, I'm going to move on to House File 3624, which is my bill, and I'm going to move the House File 3624 be recommended to pass. And I think I'm going to further clarify that amendment once we act on it. But at this point, I would ask Joanne Knuth and Ken Sakal to come forward and offer their testimony. Again, Joanne and Kent, my apologies to you both for making you wait and for, unfortunately, having you speak to a much smaller room than we had hoped to. But perhaps members might come in the next few minutes yet. So, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll begin and I'll turn it over to Joanne. It actually worked out well as I was in the room next door testifying on Representative Slocum's bill and having an interesting discussion. Thank you. My name is Kent Patel, and I'm the Executive Director of the College Readiness Consortium at the University of Minnesota, and we are here to testify in support of this bill. Mr. Chair, this morning I was working with about 70 teachers from across the state in charter schools and talking about college readiness. And as we got done with the discussion about college readiness, my hope had been that we would be in an immediate discussion about classroom issues and instruction. And we got there, but Mr. Chair, their first interest was in talking about state policy. And it really struck me. I never expected that. And one of the teachers said, I mentioned I was coming down to testify on a couple of bills today, and one of the teachers said, just tell them to give us clarity and stability. It wasn't about funding. It was about having a clear state vision for improving our schools. And a number of the other teachers applauded, Mr. Chair. From my perspective, it's clear that in Minnesota, we are not going to produce world-class student achievement unless we have a long-term strategy. There was a recent report that was done by the Asia Society on China, and this quote jumped out at me. China has a long-term plan for education and the structures and strategies to meet it. My question for all of us in Minnesota is, do we have a long-term plan for education and the structures and strategies to meet it? Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's clear that such a strategy produces results. Very briefly, in 1993, Massachusetts started down the road of reform with the passage of the Massachusetts Education Reform Act. It has been sustained through four Republican governors, a Democratic governor, and changes in a democratically controlled legislature. And it has been a phased incremental approach to improving outcomes in their state. From 1993 to 1995, they focused on finance and governance reforms. From 1996 to 2000, they focused on articulation of standards and assessments. From 2001 to 2003, they focused on student and school accountability. And since 2004, they focused on building their school capacity to meet standards and targeted assistance for schools that need it. What has all this added up to? In 2005, Massachusetts was the first state ever to have the highest scale scores on the national reading and math exams in grades 4 and 8 in the same year. 59% of their 10th graders scored proficient or advanced in both English language arts and mathematics on the most rigorous high school tests in our country. 84% of 10th graders earned their certificate of diploma on their first try, up from 68% in 2001. And just 48% in 2000, and their SAT scores have gone up for 14 straight years, and their achievement gaps are beginning to close. Mr. Chair, this bill doesn't take us to a comprehensive state strategy, but it takes a step in that direction by
wrapping the work that 500 Minnesotans have done together over the last 2 years, coming together around 10 principles of improvement, and bringing a key group of legislative and other leaders together to periodically assess how we're doing on those strategies. It might be our hope that from that process, a Minnesota world-class education reform strategy could develop. So my colleague Joanne Knust will give you a sense of what this proposal would have that group talking about and doing in the coming years.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kent. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for this opportunity to talk to you about what we believe at MASSP is a true vision for continuing to produce a world-class public education system in a world-class state. You know, we in education, and I can say this because I've been in education for my entire professional life, are very good at starting things. We're very good at initiatives. Some of us will say we're really good at fads, and there are the cynics in the room, in the schoolroom or the school building, that will say, this too shall pass. We've all heard that in various ways and at various times in our careers. However, I would submit to you that Minnesota's promise will not pass. For this reason, its 10 essential elements really provide the framework upon which we can base deep dialogue and discussion for, I would say, the next decade. And we need to do that with consideration of three very important elements. Number one, focus. Kent mentioned the results of focus in the Massachusetts story. Focus on best practice, research best practice that are contained in each of these essential elements, and they are in the bill, and they are in front of you, I know, in the reports that you have. Critical also to the sustained effort is alignment. The commonality of language. Language is important. The language that comes out of dialogue, that commonality, will help us move more quickly toward the world-class education system that will provide for the academic success of every student. The third important element, in addition to focus and alignment, is that sustained effort. There are no quick fixes. Those of us who have been in the classroom or who led schools or school districts know there are no quick fixes. What we must commit to is the sustained dialogue around what we know will work for our students over years, and that aligned dialogue not only within a school but among schools, among districts, and throughout the entire state. So to conclude, we have at MASSP a very profound vision for what we call our bridge schools, the bridge to higher learning, and that is that we would provide for the academic success of every student. I believe that the adoption of this by the legislature in Minnesota statute will provide a continuing framework for us to build that vision and to create that reality for all of our students and truly result in a world-class public education system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Knuth. Any questions, observations for Senator Wardlaw?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was flipping through on the second page. I noticed a couple things. One was implementing.
Representative Wardlaw, it's my bad. Before you do that, just in case, okay. I do have the A1 amendment, which is mostly about page 2, and it might get at your question. And so I want to move the A1 amendment. And this will put the bill in the shape that I want it. And then perhaps Mr. Pakal can speak to the changes in the language there. But at this point, if I can move that, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. And then I'll have a verbal amendment a little bit later. And do you have that? You should have that amendment before you.
I'm looking.
And perhaps while you're looking at that, Representative Wormald, Mr. Patel, if you can just speak to the amendment language.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, the language in the amendment takes us to the broad strategies that Joanne outlined, around which we achieved considerable consensus over 2 years of work together. What the original language did was it put specific programmatic options for achieving those strategies into statute. We would believe that's premature, and you need to have a lot of dialogue about how you get to great teachers and great principals work with all kids. The strategy needs to be non-negotiable, but how we get to that, the previous language pulled what we called through the Minnesota's Promise process options for change, some of which are actually not entirely in agreement with each other, because we didn't try and resolve everything, into the statute. And so this amendment takes us back to the macro level, where I believe the strategy is clear, but how you would achieve the strategy is not mandated in statute.
Yeah, Representative
Wormald. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, you took out everything I was going to ask about.
I anticipated your question there. Any other questions or observations? Mr. Patel, it would be my desire to strike Section 2 of the bill. Part of this has to do with sort of a pragmatic legislative process here. Section 2 of the bill will necessitate the bill at least moving on the Government Ops Committee, which worries me a little bit about our timing given our deadline structure. And perhaps you could speak a little bit to what kind of damage or danger I do to the bill by striking out that working group.
Mr.
Or if it's an acceptable kind of thing to do.
Mr. Chair, from my perspective, and of course there are 20-plus organizations that have been a part of this, but I would suggest that that would be an acceptable change if you think that it moves us forward. The critical point here is beginning to outline some broad strategies around which we can build consensus. You never would fix those through a single working group, and I think you have the commitment of all of us who have been a part of this process. If this legislation passes, to find the right ways to bring people together around it.
Well, members, I'm going to move to delete Section 2 of the bill, beginning on line 3.3. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, any further discussion? We have our members filtering back, so they're probably wondering what the heck's going on. But vote before we determine what's going on. Members, it would be my motion to move this then directly to the floor. I renew the motion that House File 3624 be recommended to pass and referred to general orders. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Caduce. Thank you, Mr. Patel. I had hoped we would have had a much deeper conversation, but we'll look for other opportunities for that to happen. Thank you for your fine work with our group.
Yeah.
Members, I had tabled House File 3780, and I'm told that I need to actually move to take it back off the table. We were working on some language, and I think we were very close to a vote. And so, all in favor of moving the bill off the table, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. We now have House File 3780 back before us. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want to thank all the members that were here for a very, very rich discussion. I learned a lot, very informative. I think the goal of our proposers here is to, you know, continue the conversations that have been started over the last 24 hours. You know, we've certainly moved a little bit. Certainly there's, as you know, a lot more work to do to come to consensus. It may not be possible, but it's certainly something I'm committed to doing to make sure that both sides can get their needs met in this very, very important issue. So I just wanted to thank the committee and to let you know that I have started these conversations with Dr. Dillon and her group that she's working with, as well as these parents that you've heard from, and certainly committed to making sure that those conversations continue, because it's too important an issue to have this kind of polarization on. And I appreciate the support of the committee.
Well, this is hopefully, it's been a very rich conversation, I have to say. And for the members who were stuck in K-12 finance for a little while, we actually asked for you, and we were told that there was no way we would have you, we would get you back. That's what we were told. But there were some interesting discussions, and perhaps you might want to circle around to Representative Welty and Representative Ward. In terms of some of the mechanics of the number of tests that are currently required for licensure. There is a, Representative Hoyston, I think there is a corrective amendment. There was an issue that was raised by Representative Peterson, and I believe Ms. Hoyston may have the language to be able to, is that correct, to provide a correction for that issue that was raised. Ms. Hoyston, perhaps you can guide us. We will be, we will be working off the DE1 amendment, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, members, with respect to the H3780 DE1 document, I'd like to make a few kind of technical corrections as we go along, too. On page 3, line 25, delete and. And on page 3, line 26, delete everything up to the period. There was language in an earlier Senate draft pertaining to paragraph D, but since that was since removed, the effective date needs to be changed. Mr. Chairman, members, on page 4, line 14 of this document, delete instructors and insert teacher candidates in pre-kindergarten or elementary education programs. Yes, Mr. Chairman, on page 4, line 14, delete instructors and insert teacher candidates in pre-kindergarten or elementary education programs. And Mr. Chairman, the same change needs to be made on page 4, line 26, delete instructors and insert teacher candidates in pre-kindergarten or elementary education programs. And then, Mr. Chairman, if I might, I know in paragraph B, the point of this is to ensure that the commissioner adopts a competence assessment very quickly. But the legislature generally is not in session in July 1st of 2008, so it's hard to have...
Are you sure of that?
Yes, sir. Hope not.
I would think that the direction in paragraph A suffices to establish the date, and in paragraph B, we could simply delete it since it's from a technical standpoint, not possible.
So delete section B and
paragraph B.
Paragraph B, section 5.
Yes, and so as a consequence, on page 4, line 31, delete C and insert D.
And reorder the paragraph.
Yeah. And then, Mr. Chairman, on page 5, line 15, my understanding is that these grants are for teachers through grade 2, and it may be that there are some configuration of early elementary programs that are not through grade 6. So I would recommend that instead of saying on page 5, line 15, through grade 6, insert, delete through grade 6 and insert an elementary grade. So you would say that schools providing instruction in pre-kindergarten and elementary grades may apply, since the grants apply through grade 2. And then, Mr. Chairman, a question I can't answer, but I think remains. On page 5, line 20, it describes the conditions for eligibility for a school to participate or to receive a grant, and it says on page 5, line 20, if the teachers. Is this meant to be all teachers, some teachers, one teacher? Is there some critical number of teachers that must participate in this program in order to determine eligibility?
You know, I'll again call up our proponents on that.
Very quickly.
No, there's no minimum number. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, Ms. Farson, what's...
Mr. Chairman, then I would recommend on page 5, line 20, delete the... that's before teachers. And then on page 5, line 27, after results, insert of teacher candidate.
Very well, Ms. Carson. Good. Remember, the proposal moves of oral amendments.
Right movement.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. So, members, the motion before us is that House File 3780, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Finance Committee. And, Mr. Hornstein, I believe your desire is to have this go to K-12 Finance.
Correct.
Any discussion, members, on the final motion here? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
No. I'm going to ask for a show of hands, members. All in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? At the same time, I think you were slightly outnumbered here.
Yeah.
Motion does not prevail. Members, we are trying to sort out what we're going to do with our next hearing. We know that there are a number of things that members have asked for us to consider even after deadline. And so we're trying to accommodate that, but we also know that next week we've got a pretty short week, and then the week after that we have a short week. And so we'll get back to you as soon as possible. The only possible time we can meet next week would be Tuesday morning. Thursday, as you know, we're on break. And then the following Tuesday morning, we're on break. I am thinking at this point we are not going to meet on Tuesday morning. But I do want to try to have at least one hearing where we try to tie up a number of issues, perhaps share a few cookies together and wish each other well as we enter into the next stage of the legislative session. So we'll let you know as soon as possible.
So we don't know at this point when?
Not at this point. I am very doubtful we're going to have a hearing Tuesday morning, but we'll let you know for sure as soon as possible. With that, we are adjourned.